Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly.
How are you?
I'm doing okay. Kind of a crazy weekend story.
Okay.
So my good friend from San Diego comes up with her family and her two kids, and my kids go berserk when people sleep over. They like think it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. So I'm a little nervous. I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, are they going to do okay with the sleepover? 4:16, they all wake up a.m.
Oh, no.
4:16 a.m. It's the last time I'm freaking doing a sleepover.
All of them?
All of them. My son, my older son, the ringleader,
yes,
decides to get everybody up. And it's a party, 4 a.m. But like not really, because like it's with 4 little kids. So that was my weekend, which I was pretty exhausted by. But it was great to see my friends. So maybe it made it worth it.
So your friends stayed over also?
Yeah. But they got to sleep.
They
those
did.
Fuckers. They did. Like I got up with the kids, and my friend like got up like around 9, and she's like, ah, hey. I'm like, how'd you sleep? She's like, great. And I'm like, oh, you know, FYI, the kids have been up since 4:16. And she's like, oh my God, why didn't you wake me?
I thought you were going to say 4:20 and they were all smoking weed.
That would have been nice. That would have been really great. I should have done that. But anyway, so that was my weekend. What about you?
Kind of mellow, kind of chill, still sort of, you know, responding to Mr. Prowler,
yes,
as Tiffany calls him, Mr. Prowls. He's so cute, but he does affirmatively have intestinal lymphoma. Small cell. I have to tell you, though, this is crazy. I get the call from the vet on Saturday morning right before I'm getting to my office to go see a client. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I couldn't process the information. I just kind of shoved it, you know, and then I saw my client. And I did my work. And then I got into the car afterward, and I just lost it. But we're hopeful because this is the good one to have of the bad ones, because it's small cell instead of large cell.
That's good.
And we seem to have caught it pretty early so that you know, all of his organs are functioning really well. He's eating like a horse. I mean, he's got a voracious appetite. And we have this new food for him. And we're giving him everything he wants, like whenever he wants, whatever, of course.
Sure.
Turkey? Yeah, here, have all of mine. I don't need a sandwich. You idiot. You know, and kind of a special diet. We started him on all these anti-cancer herbs
that we got
from this holistic vet special website thing. I'm trying to get a consult with a holistic veterinarian who's up in Idaho.
That's great.
To find out about Chinese herbs and things like that. And we are going to do the chemo.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I have to attack it on both sides.
I get it.
You know? So anyway, I'm coping a little bit better than
good.
I was because I just have to stay positive and hopeful.
It's
and he
hard.
Doesn't out liver flavored chemo.
Oh, interesting.
It's oral.
Oh, so my God. So it tastes good to him.
It should taste great. I just put a little bit on his food. And so at least we don't have that. If you ever tried to get medicine into a cat, it is not.
I heard it's hell.
It's not pretty.
Yeah. So that's good.
So that's good. Yeah. And the prednisone, which is a steroid, is making him very perky.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So that's great. It's like catnip.
Yeah. So that's that. Yes. And other than that, it was kind of chill. We just saw some family and stuff like that.
Good.
Yeah. I don't have any funny stories for you.
I know. You know, with my kids, I always have something.
You've always got something.
Always
something. And how's Moosey Bear?
Oh, Moose. That is the love of my life. That's for those of you who don't know, and I don't know if there is anybody who doesn't know.
I know, because we say it almost every week.
Every day. Moose is my vaginal birth dog and the love of my life. He's doing well. Thank God. So let's dive in. Let's talk about last week.
Yes, she was awesome. Brené England, the author of Beauty Sick. Such an eye-opening, and just she has a great style about her.
She was so articulate. I loved it, and I learned so much. That was a great show. So if you missed that one, you can catch us on iTunes. But it's a really, really beautiful insight about the beauty industry and women and all that good stuff.
Absolutely. Okay. Drum roll. And then you have to tell me how you know this.
Oh, my God. I am so
excited
about our guest for today. All right. So this is a very, very crazy story. Okay. So there is a show that I laugh my balls off every week, and it's called...
Let me see those balls you have.
Yeah, exactly. They're hidden up there. But it's called Impractical Jokers. And I started from season 1. I think it's on like... I mean, we'll find out, but like season, I don't know, 7, 8, whatever. But we started at the way beginning. My husband and I were like hysterical, like a drop of pee was like coming out of me every episode. So I just, so knowing the kind of jokesters that we are, I said to David, I said, David, let's have a contest. Who can contact one of the impractical jokers first? And whoever responds back to us, that person wins. Okay. So he emails all of them. No response. I don't remember how many I emailed because this was so long ago, but I emailed at least two or three. And Murr, one of the main characters, wrote me back. And so I don't even know if he knows that. And he's our guest today. So I'm super, super excited to introduce him. And I'm going to read his bio. Impractical Joker star and author James Murray, also known as Murr, and author of the new sci-fi book Awakened. The comic book publisher and television production company has optioned Murray's forthcoming novel for television. This is so exciting. Mm-hmm. Slated for publication in June 2018 by Harper's Voyager, Awakened is a sci-fi filler about an express train in New York that, after years of waiting, connects cities across the Hudson River. When the train finally launches, it arrives covered in blood as methane fills the tunnels, the structure floods, and the terrifying danger of what killed all the passengers remains unknown. Ooh, very excited.
Very.
So Murray will adapt the book for television alongside horror writer Darren Wearmouth. He's in Sixth Cycle. So anyway, we're super excited to have you. Welcome, Murr.
Welcome.
Hello. How are you guys?
Murr, do you remember that? You probably don't, but I...
No, so hold on a second. You have to tell me, what did you write and what did I write back? Okay. I'm fascinated right now.
Isn't this so funny? So basically what I wrote was, I had to get your attention somehow because I figured you guys get tons of fan mail. So what I said was, my husband and I were watching your show and... I think I even said a drop of pee came out of me. I think I actually used that exact phrase. And so you were so cute and you wrote me back and you're like, go to the bathroom before you watch the show next time or something along that line. And ever since I've like had a crush on you. That's the truth because I was like, I felt connected to you. Yes.
Oh, thank you. That's so sweet. I'm glad I didn't write like, you know, go to hell or something like that.
No, you were so like, cute. It was really sweet. And you made me win the contest. So it's all good.
What did you win?
Just
all right.
Props.
Oh,
just nothing. Nothing. I won absolutely nothing.
You got props.
I can tell you, Kelly.
How did you write me on social? Was it on social media?
I'm trying to remember because this was like, what year did you start? Because it was like season one.
We started filming the show 2010. Season one premiered in 2011.
Okay.
We're shooting season seven. We're shooting season seven right now. We're about to hit 200 episodes.
Okay, so it's 2011. Yeah, so I'm trying to think
I don't even know
if you guys had that.
We've been filming for 7 years.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Kelly sent me a clip because I don't have the channel that it's on.
She doesn't have True TV.
I'll have to get it. But I found it to be hysterical in the supermarket.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Thank you. Do you mind if I ask how you started watching the show? Like, how did you discover it 7 years ago?
Okay, it was by chance, literally just flipping through.
Just and
it was
flipping through the channel?
Yeah, and I was like, I love it. Damn, this is funny. Like, and that's how it started. So, yeah, I mean, but that's what's so great about it is that you're on this station that I think that is sort of hidden a little bit, and that works in your benefit, right, for the show?
Yeah, one of the great things True TV has been a great partner for us, but they also play the show. They play these like huge marathons of the show like 8 times a week. So chances are when you turn on True TV, we're on. You know what I mean?
Awesome.
I think we're on like 50% of the time or something like that, which is they've been an amazing partner. So it's been really cool.
So what I want to hear the personal story behind what inspired the show. I know we're going to talk about your book.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your book. Don't worry. We promise. We'll get to that.
We can promote your show also.
In real life, the guys and I are best friends. We've known each other. We met freshman year of high school when we were 13 years old, no joke. Mm-hmm. And we used to do improv and comedy together in high school. And then after college, we were like, you know what? We still want to perform together. So we created our comedy troupe at the Tenderloins. And we did like live improv and sketch comedy shows for years in Manhattan together. Mm. And we had a hard time breaking through, to be honest, because we're just regular guys. None of us had an agent or a manager. None of us had a cousin or an uncle or a father or mother or anybody involved in entertainment. We were just regular guys that loved doing comedy together. And then we had my day job outside of the TV show is I run development now for a TV company. And my job was to literally create and sell TV shows. So back in 2010, a lot of hidden camera shows were selling to networks. Like Punk'd came back with Justin Bieber as the host, and other networks were looking for hidden camera. So the guys are like, you know what? What if we came up with like a twist on a hidden camera show that's kind of like unique and different, and really puts our friendship at the forefront? So we came up with the idea for Jokers, which is like an upside down prank show, you know, where the joke is on us instead of on the public, like a typical prank show. And really what we did was we kind of stumbled onto the format that shows the world what we organically do. Like we're just friends that have really good chemistry, that love each other and also torture each other, like all good friends do. You know what I mean? And that was it. We certainly didn't succeed because of our looks. That's for damn sure.
Well, okay, and what is it like now being famous? Like, I got to know, because when you started out, it's like, I'm sure people kind of recognized you here and there, but now it's like, it must be crazy.
It's surreal. We're still just regular guys, you know? I still go over to my mom's house for a Sunday dinner, good Italian dinner at Mom Murray's house in Staten Island, you know? But we were still regular guys. Nothing truly has changed. I still live alone. I have no prospects for marriage, for love. I still raise a plant. So that's all I do. Nothing much has changed. It is surreal, like walking the streets of New York City or anywhere. And you know what's the most surreal is like the tour is surreal to us. You know, like we did a show in Manhattan 10 years ago before the TV show. And no joke, two people bought tickets to come see us perform. Two people bought tickets. And now... I mean, next week we're playing the Greek in L.A. In a month we're playing Madison Square Garden.
Wow.
You know, so it's surreal. That's the most amazing thing for me. It's like, I can't believe, like, you know, it's humbling and it's amazing. And it's everything you can imagine. It's very cool.
So
very
when cool. you're on, like, say, the one that I saw, you go into a supermarket and you're doing funny things in the supermarket. So now, with as famous as you are and well known by your faces as well, does anybody in the supermarket just sort of blow your cover?
Yeah, it happens a lot more now. You know, but we you know what it is? There's 10 million people in New York City. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for every one person that knows who we are, there are five others that have no clue or don't care and are in their own world, like all New Yorkers are, and just kind of going their business, not making eye contact with a stranger. You know what I mean?
Right.
So we manage it pretty well.
So before we go on to your book, because I'm dying to talk about that, I just want to tell one other story. Mm-hmm. So I have an 8 and a 5-year-old, and my 8-year-old loves the show. And he just saw the last one. I know, it's hilarious. The last one he saw was, I got to tell Deborah about this one. She'll love it. So basically, they pretend to sort of be in research groups, and the four guys have to like sell their product. And they always do like really crazy products. And so this last one that he was hysterical about was they sold these like X-rated stuffed animals that were like sexual. So it was like a kangaroo with like a bra, and then so I swear to God, I wish that I got a recording, because you would have loved it. But he like does the whole thing where he does the commercial. He'll be like, Mama Coconuts, Babe Room. I swear, I can imagine like an 8-year-old, right? And then he goes, dial 1-866 Babe. Like,
that's a real number. Tell your son to call that number. That's a real phone number. No joke.
That is like literally he does it.
Anytime you see a phone number on our show, it's real, and we've recorded voicemails for it, so you can dial it.
I love that. I'm going to have him call it. He'll
hysterical.
Love that.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, which one's your favorite? He's like, Mother Coconuts. Like, it's just so funny.
Mother Coconuts. That's great. I love that we're teaching your son sex ed, basically.
Pretty much. But then Coconut. You also have like the, you know, one time Joe, one of the characters, was like in a restaurant, like with potatoes, giving mashed potatoes. So like they'll go around, they'll be like, but that's the potato. Exactly. So you get the, you know, they're pretty well rounded from you guys.
I got to have to get this channel.
Oh my God.
What's it called again?
True TV.
True TV.
True TV.
True TV.
Yeah.
Do you order it like through your network thing?
Just get it through.
I think it's fairly standard in a cable package. Yeah. But that being said, I don't have cable, so I don't know.
Do you ever watch yourself?
I can't. No, you know, I don't have TV. I don't have the ability to watch myself on TV. But you know what it is? Like, we oversee all the edit of the show, and I've seen so many cuts of an episode 2 months before it airs that it's like I've seen it already. I have seen it a dozen times before it ever winds up on TV. So But I don't actually watch. I don't actually sit home on a Thursday night and watch my own show. No.
Do you all, though, when you do watch the clips, do you all sit around together and just crack up at yourselves?
No, it's so weird because we're, like I mentioned before, we're about to hit 200 episodes, and it's all like a blur to me at this point. Mm-hmm. Like one day when the series is long over, one day I think I'm going to binge watch all however many seasons we go, 10, 12, 15. It'd be wild to be, if we do. I'm 41 at this point. We started doing the show 7 years ago, right? I was in my 34 years old. If we go another 10 seasons, I'll be the world. I'll be on, like, I can seamlessly transition into like Betty White's Off Their Rockers. You know that Hank Aaron show? Like,
yes.
I'll just go from our cast right into their cast.
It's so funny. It's great. Oh my God.
That
we're
is
so
hysterical.
Happy.
Oh goodness. Okay. So do you want to talk about the book?
Yes.
I mean, sure. If you guys like, that'd be lovely.
Yes. Okay. So it's
what do you want to know?
It's going to be published by Harper Voyager. Is that a subsidiary of HarperCollins?
Yes.
Collins?
It's HarperCollins. Yeah, HarperCollins.
That's awesome. That was so great.
Cool.
It's their like sci-fi thriller horror division of HarperCollins.
Wonderful.
And so
it's I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, you. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say the story of the book. It's actually a pretty crazy story, very much like Impractical Jokers, for that matter. I wrote the book. I spent a year of my life writing the book in 2004. No joke.
Wow.
I spent a year writing it, and I could not get, because we're regular guys, like I said, we don't have ins in the industry or anything like that. I couldn't get anybody to even read it. I couldn't get an agent to read it. I couldn't get a manager to read it. I couldn't get a publisher to read the book.
Right.
And it got sent back to me unopened. They wouldn't even take it. Because, you know, you need all those connections.
Yes.
in TV and film and in publishing. You need all the music. You need all these crazy connections, or they won't even listen to you.
Yeah.
And I was like, damn it. I spent a year writing it and just sat on my computer for literally over a decade.
Wow.
And the idea came from, actually, I had this idea like kicking around my head for a long time, like a short story, like a horror story takes place in the subways. And I had it kicking around for a while. And my friend literally dared me. He goes, you know, you've been talking about that for 2 years now. Write the damn short story. So I wrote it. I sent it to him. He called me 20 minutes later. He goes, write a second chapter. Write a second short story in the same kind of world. So I wrote another chapter, and he calls me back again. He goes, this is the book. You have to write this.
Wow.
So I spent a year writing. He basically dared me to write it. So I spent a year writing the book. And fast forward, I couldn't get anybody to read it. Fast forward 13, 14 years. It's now, present time. Now we have a fan base. Now we have, you know, millions of fans around the world. And then Joker's a hit. And I was like, you know what? I want to sell that damn book. I put so much work into it. And I sent it to HarperCollins, and they loved it, and here we are. Now that comes out next year, although you can pre-order it now on Amazon. And the basic idea of the book is it's a fast-paced, conspiracy-laden thriller, monster book, takes place in the subways. The basic idea is this. In the very near future, New York City invests like several billion dollars, the biggest infrastructure project in the United States history, right? And they build this new high-speed subway train and connect all the boroughs in New York City, including Staten Island and New Jersey, together into this high-speed train system. And underneath the East River, they build this massive, gorgeous, unbelievable, high-tech, modern visitors pavilion, all glass, steel. It's literally underwater. And that's the hub where all the trains connect, you know? Mm-hmm. Super cool. Shopping, everything like that. The inaugural run of the train, the mayor's there, the president of the United States is there, the press is there, lucky New Yorkers that got chosen to witness the inaugural run are there in the visitor's pavilion underneath the East River. And the mayor's wife is on the train that leaves from Jersey City. When the train comes into the station, late, it shows up like 7 minutes late, they don't know what's going on. When the train rolls into the station, all the windows are shattered outward, the car is covered in blood, and the mayor's wife and all the passengers are missing. And that's how the book begins. And then the chaos erupts. It becomes this like race against time. And they uncover this alternate evolution. Like there's creatures underground living that we have no idea even existed. And it's only now in modern times that as humans are digging deeper and deeper that we're starting to breach these nests, so to speak. And all hell breaks loose and you realize that the Earth is a lot bigger, more mysterious than we ever thought as humans living on the surface of the planet. And the whole big heavy dose of worldwide conspiracy. It's set up for a sequel. It's exciting. It's terrifying, scary. You literally won't be able to stop turning the page to read it. It's pretty cool.
Sounds that amazing.
That
is awesome.
So yeah. I have to, of course, this is a psychology-related show, so we're going to pick apart your brain, okay?
Yeah, we want to know.
Okay. I'm ready to tackle any question you got.
Well, because it's always been curious to me, you know, like I'm a self-help writer. That's pretty standard, and, you know, it's not all that creative, but interesting. And so I always wonder what goes on in a mind like yourself to be able to create sci-fi. Like, did you have a horrible childhood? Did some terrible disaster happen? Were you plagued by nightmares when you were a kid and you just kind of put those all together? I don't know. Give us some good juice.
Okay. Let me think where it came from. I'll tell you what. So as a New Yorker, well, first of all, you know, as a New Yorker, you're already terrified when you're in the subway, right? Yes, right. Like, you have this existential angst just living in New York, you know, mm-hmm. and living in New York City. You feel that you don't realize how much tension you hold in your brain, in your body, mm-hmm. until you leave New York and you go to a beach somewhere and you're like, holy shit, I can't believe it. Uh-huh. Like, I'm a wreck, you know? Wow. So you already feel this constant dread, right? And when you're riding the subways in New York City, there are still many subway trains where when it loses the connection with the track, the entire car just plunges into darkness and you're coasting along in pitch blackness. And then, you know, maybe 10, 15 seconds later, the lights come back on when the track reconnects. And sometimes when they stop the trains for whatever reason, the lights go out and you're sitting there in darkness and you're like, holy shit, I'm trapped underground. This is crazy. This is crazy, you know? It actually is really scary. What else is down here, you know? So I was always obsessed with that idea of growing up in New York and taking the subways and commuting to work all the time. And the first short movie I ever made was called Subway. It was about a monster. I shot it back in 2001. And it's about a monster that stalks people in the subways and only kills bad people. Basically a predator that preys on other predators, like a creature that preys on bad predators in the subway system. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It was actually a really cool twist and a cool short film. And so I don't know. I'm obsessed with trains. I've always loved the idea of like underground caverns and things like that. And growing up a man of a certain age, you know, I'm 41. So growing up, I was obsessed with Alien and all these kind of movies, Jaws, I was obsessed with, things that are, you know, I used to love the, I'm terrified of sharks, I'm terrified of underground, underwater, things like that. I don't know, it's like this existential dread you feel.
Yep.
So.
Well, even when you were describing it, I got a little bit anxious. Like, when you were describing, like, yeah. It's a good buildup. I mean, you definitely feel it.
And I just dissociated.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Like, that's too much for me.
No, I did. I felt it.
For sure. When you said, actually, Jaws, oh, my gosh. When I saw that, I wouldn't get into the water for forever. Even now, when I'm in the Caribbean or someplace and I'm swimming, and I'm always like, okay, what's that?
You have no idea. Poor Murr had to... One of his punishments on the show was that he had to go in the ocean in a cage with live sharks. Mm-hmm.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
You did that?
Yes. Was that your worst punishment? I got to ask.
That's my number two fear. My number one fear is skydiving, which they already made me do.
Yes,
they threw me
out
of an airplane. And I call it cry diving because I cried from 14,000 feet down. And then they made me swim with sharks in Hawaii just recently, a few months ago. That was terrifying. My God. I just watched, literally 2 days ago, I just watched Jaws 3 with Lou Gossett Jr., the one that takes place at SeaWorld.
Uh-huh.
If you have the chance, don't watch it. It doesn't hold up. It's not good. It doesn't hold up. Your memory of it is not as good. It doesn't hold up anymore.
I didn't even realize there was a Jaws 3. This is so funny.
Oh, yeah. They filmed it in 3D, you know, so you get to see Lou Gossett Jr. in 3D. It's pretty cool.
So in the world of psychology, we have something that's called the reenactment complex, or recreating things that have already occurred. So that's part of what Disney does with their movies, that they make the terrible stepmother and the and the monsters, and the little kids will watch it over and over and over again because they're trying to master something that is frightening to them.
Mm-hmm.
So it sounds like you did a little bit of that. You wrote something to master some of your fears about this and put it in a different kind of light.
It definitely could be. I mean, I remember growing up, I was terrified of my basement. Terrified. Like all kids, I guess. I don't know. It was just dark and cobwebs, and I had a huge train set in the basement, and I was terrified to go down there and play with them even, you know? And there was a well in my parents' basement still there, and it always used to make sound and weird noise, and I was literally terrified.
Oh my
and then,
God.
Of course, we grew up with We grew up, I'm not sure how old you guys are, but I was terrified growing up with Poltergeist, the movie.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
I'm 39.
Scare so me yeah, to hell.
Still is scary.
I'm 41, so we're yeah. close. Terrifying. Oh. When a tree reaches through the kid's window and takes it and drags them out.
Yes.
I had a tree in front of my house growing up. I was so scared. And then I lived on a dead-end block right next to woods, and there's no light on the end of my block. So it was pitch black at night next to woods, and Friday the 13th came out, and that's it, man. That's it. I was done.
I so get it.
And,
oh my,
and
God.
My parents were taking me to movies like Carnal Knowledge when I was 10 years old.
What's that?
All sex.
Okay. I know Carnal Knowledge. I remember that.
No horror movies. No,
right. Just sex.
Sex. Just sex.
So
no.
Mm-hmm. No wonder you're
obsessed with sex or yeah, afraid exactly. of sex or who knows what. Yes, Murray, you did not know you were going to get a whole therapy session today.
Right, exactly.
Did you?
I'm going
I actually knew and I was hoping to get one. I'm not paying you guys, but you know, or send me an invoice and maybe I will. If it's a really good session, I'll pay you.
That's so funny. So we are talking with James Murray, also known as Murr, Impractical Joker star and author of the new sci-fi book Awakened. So what have I can imagine the fans are probably loving this. What has the reaction been about the book?
It's been wild. It's been great. You know, we announced it at Comic-Con in San Diego about 2 months ago, because I also got it optioned by a company called IDW, which is a huge comic book and graphic novel company. It's like they're like the third biggest comic book company, you know, behind Marvel and DC.
Oh, wow.
And they optioned the book to develop it as a TV series. And so we're going out this fall to pitch as a TV series as well. So we announced it at Comic-Con, which they have a huge Comic-Con presence, you know. Mm-hmm. So we announced it there, announced the book on pre-sale and everything. And we announced it at our Impractical Jokers block party. The fan response was crazy. It's been really overwhelming. I've been very excited about it. And
so
I think
cool.
because fans are like, it's cool to see, like, you know, we all do different things, guys and I on the show, you know, like Q writes comic books, has a comic book coming out this fall. Joe's writing a book and developing a TV series as well. Oh. Sal does stand-up comedy on his own. The guys and I, of course, all tour together, but Sal does his own solo stand-up. And then I just wrote this book. So it's like, I think fans love that, like,
yes.
We're not just defined by one thing. Like, okay. There's an endless well of creativity behind what the guys and I do. So it's been really cool. I must say, they've been very supportive of it. And I've been doing a cool thing. Like, fans that, like, when fans order it, if they send, like, a proof of purchase, I've been sending out, like, signed, autographed posters of the book to mm-hmm. them, you mm-hmm. know, in advance. And then when fans get 10 of their friends to buy a copy, if they send, like, 10 proofs of purchase to me, mm-hmm. I then FaceTime them, and I read them the first chapter of the book directly on FaceTime.
Oh,
pretty,
wow.
pretty cool. That's
so
wild.
Cool.
That's amazing.
That is amazing.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun, I must say.
Now, has this inspired you to already start your next novel?
I actually am excited. I already know exactly where the second novel would go. Awakened is developed as a trilogy.
Uh-huh,
and,
okay.
And I know exactly what the second book would be, and I know how I know a lot of the crazy death scenes in it that I'm gonna come up with. So yeah, I'm hoping to start writing the sequel this fall.
It's so funny when people have like a little bit of like a dark side. Like you watch Murr and you'd think like, oh, he's like a sweet, innocent, you know, nice guy, and then he's got this like dark side. It's great. I love it.
You know, everybody has a dark side.
It's true.
That's how we're wired as humans.
Yes.
We have to. It's just that actors and creative people, there's just so much more willing to acknowledge that. I remember that the psychiatrist who I was getting a job from a long time ago at a treatment facility, and he sits me down, and the interview question that he asked me right off the bat, never met this guy, had no idea, and he goes, tell me what's your sickest sadistic fantasy?
No.
And I'm like, okay, is he going to be like a serial killer and he wants like some juice?
Right.
Or is he like, what is it? If I say that, am I then implying that
right.
I'm a sicko? And if I say I don't have any, then he's going to think that I'm not in
right.
touch with myself. So I went for it.
You did?
I did.
And you got the job.
I did.
What was your answer? I have to know.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, at that time, it was more innocent than it would probably be now.
Today?
It's a long time ago. But I had had a recent breakup with somebody, and he was just such a jerk. And so my fantasy at that moment was I wanted to slash all of his tires and sort of like take the rubber and put it all over, mm-hmm. you know, his surroundings, and And just something like that, you know, okay, it wasn't
that's
that,
not
bad,
that bad.
No.
Mm.
I didn't want to go with my sickest fantasy,
right?
You know,
exactly.
Because, yeah.
Just
no, you got to save that. You got to keep that close to the, you know, keep that close.
Yes.
You can't give that for free to people.
So what would be your?
You got to earn that.
What? Okay, so everybody share and tell.
Oh,
what would be your sadistic fantasy?
So, God, that's really tough.
Murray, does it have
first.
To be a revenge fantasy? Does it have
no,
to be like
it could
a
be anything?
A re- no.
Anything? Yeah.
You know what? Q and I were just talking about this. I'm not joking. We just talked about this afternoon, hours ago. I said to him on set, I was like, I can't believe, you tell me, you guys are the pros at this. You know this kind of craziness, but I can't believe there are not more serial killers out there.
I know.
I can't believe it. How is that possible? I don't know. I can't believe it. I'm glad there aren't.
Right.
But and are there more serial killers than we think that just don't get caught?
Mm.
What's the answer? Are there a lot that haven't gotten caught, or are there just not many because most people kind of control their crazy impulses?
I don't know. I think
you know what occurred to me? I'll tell you why. Because I was watching a movie yesterday, and they're like, oh, in 99% of the cases, the murderer is always somebody that knew you, that's that got scorned in some way or right. slighted or something like that. But, and there's like 1% that's totally random. I can't believe there's not many, many, many more random killings. Why
I
is
think
that?
There are more than we're aware of.
Okay.
If they don't get caught.
There
but I
are.
Do think that most people, if you have a little ounce of empathy in your body at all, mm-hmm. most people could never mm-hmm. pull off mm-hmm. any of the things that they actually do.
Right.
Because
so,
you would just.
Let me ask you one more question while we're discussing this. Have you read Crime and Punishment? Dostoevsky.
I
you remember
know,
that
no,
book
no.
back in the day?
I've heard it's a
classic story of a guy commits a murder, blah, 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 and then feels so guilty about it,
mm-hmm.
Kind of like Lady Macbeth wringing her hands full of blood, you know? Feels
yeah.
so guilty, eventually he has to confess. He feels compelled to confess, right, to get caught.
Mm-hmm.
And they do things to basically get themselves caught. Is that a real thing?
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
like, do they just get away with it and, you know? Like, do you feel that guilt?
Oh, I think some of them do.
Yeah, sure.
It kind of depends, right? If you've got the pure sociopath,
yes,
the
doesn't feel anything
personality disorder. Yeah, they have no conscience at all. They know right from wrong by the law, etc. But they
mm-hmm.
don't have any sense of this is a good thing to do or this is a bad thing to do, and they're completely devoid
mm.
of empathy. So I don't think they care if they get caught, but they like the game is what I understand.
Mm. Well, remember, so we
they like the game.
We had a guest on, Murr. It was so funny. He claims to be the highest IQ in the world.
Oh, yeah.
And he is the creator of the show Scorpion on, I guess it's on Fox or some network. And he claims that he has
no feelings,
zero empathy, like zero. And so, of course, I was like going to town with this. I was like, so you're telling me, like,
a
what about
claim.
When you're dating, like, and your girlfriend falls? And he's like, well, socially, I know to ask her if she's okay, but it doesn't
yeah,
come
but he doesn't,
naturally.
He didn't care.
Yeah, it was very interesting. Very interesting.
I
wow.
still didn't believe him.
I know.
Wow.
She didn't,
now,
she didn't
here's
believe
the
it.
Question. Here's the question. Do you believe him?
I don't.
Deborah didn't. At first,
you
I
don't.
Did. And now I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it was funny because I actually gave him a compliment. This is interesting. Before we went on air, so because he came in live, he had these really pretty blue eyes. And so I looked at him and I said, mm-hmm. you have really pretty eyes. And he blushed a little bit. And I think
oh.
if you don't feel anything,
you're not blushing.
Then you're not blushing. And so, you know, and I think I caught him off guard because like, he's ready to do an interview. I'm like, hey.
You interrupted his shtick.
Yes, exactly. So, yeah. So we'll never know. I mean, there's a lot
interesting.
If you Google this guy, there's a lot of, you know, people who say it's a hoax and things like that. So I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
It was
yeah.
interesting, though. He's
yeah.
very smart. That's for sure.
Yes.
And I think that's super, super smart.
Does he, in fact, have the highest IQ in the world?
He claims something. One of them.
One
I think
them.
He says it's like one of like five people in the world or something like that. So.
Wow.
I know.
Like, did he know, like lots of big words and stuff?
He
I don't
seemed,
know. Is that,
he seemed very
is that,
bright.
Is that how you're,
I mean, yeah, like, he
like, seemed, was his, like, did he have, like, really good SAT vocabulary?
I mean, you wouldn't have, like, picked him. I mean he seemed bright. He seemed smart. He seemed creative.
Yeah.
But, yeah, who knows? It was interesting.
Yeah.
It was interesting, for sure. But, God, I can understand the serial killer stuff, though. I became obsessed with serial killer novels. There was about 7 years that that's all I would read. I mean, literally obsessed with them. I couldn't wait to get to the gym, get on the treadmill, have my little book opener thing, and just, I'd go through at least one a week.
Oh, my gosh.
And every series that I could find.
Did that affect your dreams? Were you dreaming serial killer novels?
I don't think I was, actually. I always have really crazy dreams anyway, so I don't know that they were any crazier as a result of that. I just found them to be so fascinating.
Look at Murr. He's like therapist Murr.
Yeah.
He's like, you can
keep going. No, I'll tell you why. I'm asking for a selfish reason, though. I dream mostly every night, not every night, but I dream many nights a week full horror movies.
Really?
From beginning to end, a full original horror movie. And I'm not joking. I every morning I wake up. If I wake up in the middle of the night, I remember it. Mm-hmm. And I'll grab my phone and I'll record it. So I have dozens. I don't know why they haven't used this on the Practical Jokers yet against me. But I record messages, sleepy, groggy, not making any sense, of what the horror movie dream that I had was.
Wow.
Well, I'm curious. What character are you in that dream?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You ready for this?
Yes.
You're the killer.
You know what the answer is going to be.
You're the killer.
I'm usually the killer.
Yeah.
I'm
what does that mean,
killer.
Deborah?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
I had a dream. My most recent one, you know what? I don't know if it'll play because I'm on my AirPod thingamajiggies, but let me see if I can pull it up and play it for you.
Okay.
Here we go. I'm just going to read you the names of my audio recordings, right?
Yeah.
Plain Dream. Hallie Joel Dream? I don't know what that means.
Hallie Joel Osment? The guy from Sixth Sense.
I guess so. Dream of painter who captures people into paintings. Let me see if it'll play. It may not play because it's not going to play because I'm on AirPods. Okay. Anyways, so dream of painter who captures people into paintings. I was the painter. I was the serial killer.
Wow.
And anytime I would draw them on a canvas, they would get sucked into the painting and basically murder them. It would basically be murdering them because they're trapped for all eternity in my painting. And they get sucked out of real life into my painting. Crazy, crazy.
So what is your analysis?
Well, I would say that he's the least likely person to actually be violent.
Yes, I would say that. You seem so sweet, Murr. Like,
or do you have a violent side?
Thank you. I don't think I have a violent side, no.
Yeah.
I don't think I do. I'm a lover, not a fighter.
I also
I can't defend myself. I can't defend myself, so I would lose in the fight.
But I think that's what's so powerful and amazing when we can embrace our fantasy life, right? Because fantasy life can be very rich. We can create even just, they have studies now that if you focus on a trip that you want to take, just the mere thought of like organizing that in your mind and thinking that you're planning it raises the good
chemicals
in the brain, you know, and people report feeling better. So I think that being able to do that, it's almost like a cathartic discharging thing, right? If you allow yourself that richness in your cleverness of violence and things like that without actually doing it,
right?
It's kind of relieving, I would think.
Yes, that makes sense.
That's
there you go.
There, I was giving you
there
lots
you
of compliments there.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. So neither of you think I'm an axe murderer. That's good. And you think it's cathartic and good. I agree with you.
You're probably one of the ones who just hasn't gotten caught yet, right?
Right, exactly. You're one of the ones we're talking about.
Yeah. Basically, what I'm saying is I've never been caught.
Because I did read. I can't remember the name of this book.
And they'll never catch me, too.
They'll never catch you.
One day, they're going to pull up this broadcast, right? And they're like, I'm going to be on like an episode of some show on Investigation Discovery, and they'll be like, the signs were all there that murder was the killer. You know what
right?
I mean?
That is so
listen to his near listen to his near confession with Deborah and Kelly.
But that's what's so crazy about it. I once read a book about serial killers, you know, former ones like John Lacey, was that his name?
Oh, Lacey Peterson, Scott Peterson?
Mm-hmm. No, no, another one. There was another.
Oh, another Peterson. I know who you're talking about.
No,
Lacey. Oh, then I don't know who you're talking
Gacy.
About.
Gacy. Sorry. Gacy.
Okay.
But some of these people, they led very normal white bread lives. They were just walking on the street just like anybody else. And they had friends. They had nice relationships with people. Like some people, you've heard of these. Like the wives never knew.
Yes.
Had no idea. Oh my gosh.
Well, that's my question, I guess. Is it always in you or does one day you just sort of snap? I mean, I guess it could go both ways. Do you know what I mean?
Who knows? Who
seems
knows?
Like
well, let's try to find out. Let's try to find out. Let's make a pact right now, the three of us, that we'll report back in 1 year on the same broadcast.
Yes.
We'll get together and see what we found out in the year.
I'm so down. Count me in.
I thought you were going to say, see if we can each force each other to crack so we'd all become.
Have you guys heard of this? Have you guys seen this song? I saw the ads on Facebook, so you know it's got to be real. this serial killer, you sign up for a serial killer service. And they send serial killer notes to your house.
Stop.
And you have to solve, no joke, and you have to solve the puzzle or whatever before you get quote unquote killed.
Oh, that sounds fascinating.
They send literally serial killer notes to your house. It's a real thing.
But it's
for
a game.
You know, it's kind of like an natural extension of, you know, the escape room, things like that.
Yeah, escape room. I love
it. Same kind of idea.
Yeah. Oh, I'm signing up. But I'm a little scared at the same time. That's great.
I know. I would be scared too. That's, you know. If I see different letters from a newspaper cut out and put, you know, and put on a piece of paper, I'm going to freak out.
Like I'm going to send a subscription
something
to you. Oh my
That's
goodness!
So funny.
Wow. So okay, this is so exciting. All right, and are you doing a book signing tour?
I will next year. I'm doing a full book signing tour,
wow.
and the tour will parallel the Impractical Jokers tour.
God.
If like for example we're playing in San Diego, that afternoon, I'm sure I'll be at a bookstore somewhere signing books as well.
Oh, that's great.
That's
oh my
great.
God.
Now there's a key to having a successful book, by the way, that you need to talk to your editor at HarperCollins. Are they going to face your book in the stores?
Are they going? I hope so.
What does that mean?
That would be great. I hope so.
So facing is where you could actually see the cover of the book. You know how you go to the bookshelves
yes.
and they're
yeah.
on your spine
yes.
or faced.
Oh.
And mine were always next to Dr. Phil. So his were always faced.
Mm.
So when my first book came out, we ran in, we turned all his to the spine.
And then
I'd go to every bookstore and I'd face mine.
Oh, that's great. Oh, that's so funny.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to challenge our fans.
There you go.
To go out there to every bookstore across America and face my book.
Do it, because it really helps. It. When I did that, the sales were better.
No,
oh, absolutely.
Really?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because that's the way people see it. Your
yes.
eyes go right to the
yeah.
cover, mm-hmm. as opposed to tilting your head and
yeah,
reading
makes sense.
The, you know. So
oh my God.
There you go. That's a little tip for you.
So, Murray, you're going to have your picture on it though, but in the back, not on the cover. I'm assuming.
My picture will be on the back. It probably won't be on the front cover because that would be. Too ridiculous.
Oh my God. This is
so this is very exciting for you. Is there going to be are you going to do your own book launch party kind of thing?
I actually am. I actually have a meeting next week about it, no joke. What I want to do is we just did a punishment on Jokers where Sal is terrified of, he's super OCD. He's terrified of germs and everything. And he's very scared very easily. So we did a punishment last week on the show where we made Sal climb down into a real sewer in New York City, and it opened up into this giant underground cavern. For real, it's a real place in New York City. And we recreated The Walking Dead. It was a full-blown zombie apocalypse underground.
Oh,
it was
God.
Terrifying, right? He nearly shit himself.
I'm
no
sure.
joke, right? Full-blown zombie apocalypse. So when we were filming it, I was like, oh my God, this is perfect for my book launch.
Oh.
No joke. So next year, I'm going to put together a huge book launch where fans can climb down into this sewer and go from room to room experiencing several of the chapters of the book and when they and getting scared jealous. And when they go through the different chapters of the book physically, I'm going to create like a whole set and everything. When they go through the book, when they finally come out of the book on the other end of the sewer, I'm there with my co-writer Darren Weirmouth. And we are going to be there signing books and autographs to people taking photos. Isn't that a cool
book?
I love
that. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Will you invite us?
Right? You guys have to come. It's going to be so exciting.
Wait, can you seriously? And you're coming to L.A. Do you have any extra tickets? Deborah and I will come to your freaking thing.
I will take care of you guys right now. I'm going to get you guys two tickets each, okay?
Stop.
No way.
To the Greek? My crush.
Yep.
It's growing.
What's
We're
the
in trouble.
Date?
Yep. It's this Sunday. We're at the Greek.
Oh my
this
God.
Sunday. So excited.
If,
okay.
If you guys are free,
yes.
If you guys are free and seriously interested, just let me know and I'll get you two tickets each, okay?
Please.
Oh my God.
Oh my
so
God. Yes.
Okay, good. You're on. We'll talk after this.
All right. And then we have like a reception afterward. You got to come backstage and and we'll get to meet in person, take a photo together, okay?
Yes. Oh my
that
God. We're
awesome.
So excited.
Okay, oh my great. Gosh. That's so exciting.
So,
yep.
Well, we have a few minutes
That'd
left.
Be fun.
Is there anything that you want to talk about, promote, whatever, the last couple minutes? Want to make sure we got in everything.
Oh, no,
to say.
I, this is just, this has been just, honestly, this has been a lovely, interesting conversation. That's it. it's been so much fun. I would love to come back again and be a guest. And maybe one day when I'm actually in your neck of the woods, we'll actually get to do one of these together in person. That'd be wild.
Oh, okay, my gosh, wait, for sure. I have an even better idea, actually. Can we prank my husband? Like, we have to do something because he is.
That would be fun.
He's the biggest prankster. Really quick story that you'll appreciate. So he's a huge prankster. And we went to this. My son had like this big gala at his school. And one of our friends got a little too drunk. And it was on that CBS studio lot that where it was held. And he was too lazy to go to the bathroom. So he took a piss in the corner. So the security guard comes over kind of a little bit too late, but was like, "Hey, what are you doing?" And this guy was like, "Oh, no, I'm good. Nothing, whatever." So, you know, he got away with it. Well, my husband, he's a techie. He goes home and he creates this official letter with the CBS studio logo on it. Okay. With a timestamp of a video camera where it's sort of green and grainy, so you can't really quite see. And it's like, you know, "Dear Mr. Sellers, like, we've been alerted that you've been urinating." And then he took like the penal code, 2.7. So his wife calls me and is like, "Oh my God, Kelly, you have no idea. We just contacted a lawyer. I'm freaking out because he could." And I was like, I had to tell her because I was like, she was like hyperventilating.
Oh my God.
So we'll have to do something to my husband. Are you game?
That's so funny.
Oh my God.
We did.
I would love to. That'd be wild. Yes. Well, we'll plan something out for this Sunday and I'll prank the hell out of him.
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. Great. We did a pretty good one on your husband though when we went camping for my
birthday weekend. Yes.
Yeah. Kelly comes up with this idea. She's texting me because we were driving separate. We were going up to the wine country and camping. And she says, "Okay, you have to tell my husband that we're all going into the jacuzzi naked and he's going to join us." And because she says he's pretty modest. God. And he's not.
He's not really, but he would be shocked.
Yeah. So we pulled this off for as long as I could possibly tolerate it. I couldn't take it. I just couldn't.
Yeah, she's not good at holding
it in. No, I could not stand to watch somebody like kind of like really. He looked really nervous. Like he really didn't know. And finally he goes, "Okay."
Yeah, he was used out. All right. He was like, "All right,
we're all doing it." Then, okay. He didn't even know that there wasn't even a jacuzzi there.
That's right. Exactly. After all that.
There you go. Well, tell him that when you come backstage on Sunday, it's clothing optional.
That's so funny. We should totally do that.
We should.
Well, Mer, you are such a pleasure. I'm so happy to have you on today. And so where can people find the book so they can pre-order it right now on Amazon?
Yes, you can get the hardcover or the Kindle version available for pre-order now. Go to Amazon.com and just type in "Awakened James Murray." It'll pop right up. And come see us on tour. Go to thetenderloins.com or impracticaljokers.com and you can see all of our tour dates.
Oh, good. Awesome. I was going to ask you that. That's awesome.
Okay. All right. Okay. We'll contact you after the show because we're on this.
All right, you guys. Fun. Yeah, for sure. I'm going to have our team reach out to you guys and we'll get you a bunch of tickets, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
So all right. Wonderful.
You got it, guys. Generous. Thanks so much. Great talking to you.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my God. It's okay. Over.
You know how terrible I am about, I forget to write who's coming on next week.
Oh, yeah. Was that you?
Sharon Begley.
Yes.
There we go.
Sharon Begley, Just Can't Stop, I think is the name of the book. Oh, Can't Just Stop. Yeah, it's about impulsivity, compulsions. It's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, and she's a science lady. I love science people. That's
going to
be awesome.
She's very smart, you can tell. Yeah.
Well, I am so glad that you turned me on to this show I am going to find it. Christopher and I will...
You
have to have a good laugh, right?
Literally, like you will be crying. Like,
What's the punishment component of it?
Oh, this is great. So basically, they have this contest about... So they tell each other, you know, what to do. And if you don't do it or you do it wrong or you don't get picked, then the person who gets the X's the most has to be punished, and all the other three think of a punishment it's usually something really horrible, like the worst punishment ever. Well, I have to tell you
what he just said awful.
No, but that's nothing to me. This was like one of the worst. So Sal, one of the guys on the show, he had to sit in a play, in a live play. Nobody knew who he was or that he was there, and he had to keep his phone ringing. So it would ring.
Oh, no.
And people would look over and be like, "Turn it off." And he's like, I can't. And he can't say anything. So, and the worst part is they put this ring on it that was like just obnoxious ring. So it was like, nah, 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 nah. And so, you know, these people are like on live stage and it rang like maybe 15 times. So that to me was like pretty torturous.
The embarrassment, the humiliation. Oh my gosh, I wouldn't have been able to do it. Right, I would have taken the next punishment.
Right, exactly. I'm not kidding. No, you can't. You have to do the punishment. The punishment is
non-negotiable.
Exactly.
Oh my goodness. Okay, well, we've had a good serial killer conversations and lots of interesting ideas and practical jokes. Okay. All right. It looks like I might be seeing you on Sunday.
Yes!
All right, everybody, take care. We love you.
Follow us next week on Instagram at Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly and Twitter at DocTherapist1. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.